Stand, please.
Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its honorable court. Be seated. Case number 09-1709.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Hi.
I doubt I'll use all the time that I have because I only have a few short points to make.
Please speak close to the microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's much discussion in the briefing of the appellee along the lines of Congress said what it meant and meant what it said, and Congress said individual, and therefore they want us to draw certain meaning from the word individual, notwithstanding that the word individual in other contexts, in other statutes, in other dictionaries besides the dictionaries they chose to cite, the word individual can include a collective of individuals and even a corporation. Even Black's Law Dictionary gives that alternate definition. But the same can be said, the same argument that Congress meant what it said and said what it meant can be flipped around. If Congress had meant natural person, Congress could have said natural person. The word natural person is known to every law student, and if they meant to limit it only to natural people and not to juridical people or statutory people, organizational individuals, Congress...
Well, in 2A1, subjects an individual to torture, presumably that refers to natural persons, right?
Correct.
Although I could imagine torturing Exxon or BP or something like that as a violation, but it seems not to be contemplated.
I suppose maybe the guy who blew up the oil rig might have tortured BP a little bit.
Right. But, okay.
So
here in the very next, in the next clause of the same sentence, or... Two, subjects an individual to extrajudicial killing, there we have a different situation. Right?
You're right. It does say that. But the cases we cite in our reply brief, I believe, more than amply make clear that where the same word appears in two different contexts, it would be absurd to talk about torturing an organization.
Yeah.
We all know that would be absurd.
So the alternative phrase is an individual who, right? That's the one that you're focusing on.
As opposed to an individual. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So you're saying the subject of the sentence, an individual who, could be a corporation.
Correct.
But an individual who tortures tortures an individual could only be a corporation.
Right.
We're only a natural individual.
You know, language, the English language, alas, is not always so precise because words convey multiple meanings.
Well, of course, it's our job as lawyers to torture that language,
so to speak. but if we think about it practically in the real world. Limiting this to individual, to natural persons, limiting the word individual to natural persons would, as a practical matter, go against or defeat to some extent the remedy that Congress sought to provide.
You're not interested in corporations, really, right? You're interested in states or quasi-states.
Well, we're interested, I would take away the plural, we're interested in a particular quasi-state-like entity, which...
But you can't say it means just the Palestinian Authority.
No.
So you're saying it means states or quasi-states.
Correct.
And why isn't it perfectly sensible that the Congress might not have wanted a bunch of individual plaintiffs to interfere in state-to-state relations between this United States government and foreign governments by bringing litigation against those governments,
well,
apart from the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act exceptions?
I think that would be completely against what the statute actually says, because the statute actually requires that the person have been acting under some kind of state, under the law of some foreign nation. It doesn't say state, by the way, and that's an important distinction.
But the other signatories, does it apply only to other signatories?
I'm sorry?
Does it apply to individuals acting under the color of the laws of other states that are signatories to the convention?
I want to be very careful to catch one term that your honor is blurring. It's not, the statute refers to acting under the color of the laws of foreign nations, not foreign states.
Okay.
And that's an important distinction, because
that's fine.
As Kadjet had found,
Is it any foreign nation, or is it a foreign nation that's
foreign
a signatory
nation
to the convention?
Any foreign nation. It's roughly parallel to 1983, where you have to be acting with some kind of a governmental authority. And there's no question that the Palestinian Authority, in its territory that it controls, exercises governmental authority. It has ambassadors, it has police departments, courts, jails, municipal services, garbage men.
I understand it's a subsequent issue. So the extrajudicial killing or torture.
Correct.
Administered by someone
on
behalf of or under the color of law.
Correct.
Needn't actually be an official, I guess, right?
No.
Could be pretending to be.
Exactly. but if we were to say that the governmental entity, the Palestinian Authority in this case, which, to be precise, is not a corporation. It is a sui generis entity that was created as a result of a treaty between Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization, which itself is not a state, and isn't recognized by anyone as a state. The closest parallel of the Palestinian Authority in history would be the Free City of Danzig, that was created by the Versailles Treaty. But that's an aside. But to exempt the entity itself from liability would mean that the Palestinian Authority or any such entity could hire unknown thugs, people who wear masks over their faces, people who are anonymous. It could be in an oil field in Nigeria, it could be in a village in the West Bank or in Gaza, people who come, do their violence, and retreat into anonymity, leaving no realistic chance that they'll ever be served with a summons, identified or served with a summons and sued. Whereas the entity that...
This is true of 1983 as well, right?
That's true. Except in 1983, as a practical matter, taking place in the United States, people acting under color of state authority are much more often known who they are. I mean, I guess the closest we come is when police officers are sued as John Doe, but by and large, they do get identified as the case progresses.
There's municipal liability under...
If there's a
pattern of practice.
If there's a pattern of practice or a municipal policy.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
If this were a suit against a state, you would say then that an individual would include not only an organization like the PA, but also a state?
Well, a suit against the state, against an actual state, would have to proceed under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act.
But it wouldn't say, under your theory, though, the word individual couldn't be limited only to, your theory is it includes entities, right?
It includes entities, correct.
Therefore, would include states.
Except states have their own special category under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act.
It would
include states if the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act and the doctrine of foreign sovereign immunity didn't exist.
But is that a reason for thinking maybe it doesn't include entities? Because if it did, it includes states, and we know it can't include states?
No, it wouldn't be a reason. I'm sure my learned adversary is going to bring up the Second Circuit's recent decision in Kiobel, and I would urge you to read the lengthy dissent or concurring opinion of Judge LaValle, where he dissents from the reasoning but concurs in the result, and points out that exactly as I just said, if you were to read these statutes to allow suit only against the individuals, the, for example, the oil company that wants to rid a oil-rich territory of its indigenous people could hire thugs, the Pinkerton detectives come to mind, wipe the place out, the thugs disappear, never can be sued, there's some mercenaries in Africa, and Shell Oil or whomever can sit pretty and say, well, you can't sue us, we're an entity. That would so fly in the face of the policy underlying these statutes that torture and extrajudicial killings are not to be tolerated.
Global under the ATS, or is it?
That's under the ATS.
Well, then that doesn't.
But the reasoning is parallel. The reason.
Not exactly. It doesn't use the word individual.
No, but the reasoning of why liability has to be allowed against entities for these statutes to make sense.
There is a better rationale for liability there, that because there the issue is what's in violation of international law, not whether Congress meant the word individual to mean individual.
That's the rationale that the majority reached in that case.
That's also Judge LaValle's rationale. He just believes that it is in violation of international law.
Yes, but he goes on in his 70 or so pages to talk about the on a policy level, the evils that would result if liability were not allowed against the entity. There's an alternate path, though, which I wanted to...
What you mentioned the Second Circuit decision. I'm sure the government will also bring up the Ninth Circuit's opinion, and I'm curious about to hear your reaction to the Ninth Circuit's reliance on this legislative history, which they point out that an earlier version of the statute used the word person. But it was changed to individual to make sure that it was limited to humans.
With all due respect to those who place such faith in legislative histories like that, unless somebody said, to my reading, unless somebody said the reason we're changing this word is we wanted to make it clear that we're not covering entities, I don't think it's fair to ascribe such far-reaching meaning.
I think the congressman who asked for the change said that. Didn't he?
But it's not in the statute. They could have said natural person. They could have said natural person. They could have written, if they meant that,
Your answer to it is that we just shouldn't pay attention to it because it's just legislative history.
That's correct. Okay. I wanted to mention the words respondeat superior. Even if the entity is not directly liable for the actions of its employees, agents, servants who did this torture and extrajudicial killing, an alternate path for them to be liable is under the doctrine of respondeat superior. These people were doing, the allegation is that these people were carrying out the policy of the Palestinian Authority, that the people who did it were employees or agents or servants of the Palestinian Authority. So even if they don't have primary, even if the PA does not have primary liability, under very established doctrines of respondeat superior, they should nevertheless be held liable. I know my learned adversary will tell us about cases where aiding and abetting liability has been questioned. But aiding and abetting liability is something different. The idea that a corporation is liable, or a corporation or an entity or any employer is liable for the actions of his, her, or its employee carried out in the scope of their employment is unremarkable. Lastly,
can I just ask,
sure.
Remember, I think your learned adversary suggested one of your arguments hadn't been raised below. Was that one that hadn't been raised below or had been raised?
I'm not sure. I'm sure she'll tell us. I honestly don't recall her mentioning that.
I'm asking whether you raised it below. The respondeat superior, did you rely on it below?
I know that it is alleged, not by the words respondeat superior, but the complaint plainly makes out a claim of that these actions were taken in the scope of the employment and to carry out the policy objectives of the Palestinian Authority.
Could you have sued under Israeli law, that is, under diversity jurisdiction here or in Israel?
I mean, could the plaintiff, who's an American citizen, have sued in an Israeli court?
Or in the United States court under diversity?
Well, it wouldn't be diversity. It would be alienage, perhaps. Perhaps. Perhaps we could. I don't know the Israeli law that would be applicable. In other words, I don't know whether
Israel have a law against torture.
Well, for sure, but whether that law is applicable to something that takes place in the Palestinian territories is a trickier question. If it had taken place in Israel, as opposed to territory under the control of the Palestinian Authority, it would be easier to answer. This would then be a question of perhaps Palestinian law, whatever that is, and considering that these actions are alleged to have been carried out by the Palestinian Authority, which is the be-all and end-all of Palestinian law, I don't know how that would wind up. I'm not an expert in Palestinian law. But it's an interesting question.
Thomas Chilton, your time is up. We'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Laura Ferguson. I'm counsel for the Palestinian Authority, MPLO. Let me first turn to why neither the Palestinian Authority nor the PLO can be deemed an individual for purposes of the Torture Victim Protection Act. The TVPA, as we know, does not define the term individual. Under principles of statutory construction, an undefined statutory term should be given its ordinary meaning. And in ordinary usage, an individual is understood to refer to human beings, not a corporation or an organization such as the PA or PLO. And
are
in legal usage, sorry.
Are there not exceptions?
The Dictionary Act tells us that person is generally the term that's used when a statute is to refer to both individuals and corporations. The plaintiffs did identify in their briefs four statutes where the courts had departed from the plain meaning of individual and had departed from the sort of Dictionary Act sort of use of person to mean juridical persons as well as natural persons. But they did so in the context of first statutes that, unlike the TVPA, did not also use individual in the same statute in a way that could only refer to a natural person. As you noted earlier, here individual is used to refer to the victims of torture and extrajudicial killing. So there wasn't that tension with the principle against statutory construction that you view a term in a statute consistently. Second, in those cases, the courts found that there was an ambiguity that required a resort to congressional intent in determining the underlying purpose of the statute. And in those cases found that given the underlying purpose of the statute, one could only conclude that Congress meant to include more than just individuals. And I think the best example of that is a case that on which the plaintiffs relied heavily, the Middleton case in the Ninth Circuit, where the statute was intended to criminalize damage to computers used in interstate and foreign commerce. And it used the term prohibited hacking into a computer system of one or more individuals. And the court said, well, since the computers that are used in interstate and foreign commerce are most often owned by corporations, it would entirely gut the purpose of the statute to conclude that Congress meant individual to only refer to human beings. Here, even if one concluded there was some ambiguity about how individual was used in the TVPA, and one looked at the underlying purpose of the TVPA, one of those key purposes was to make clear that whereas aliens, non-U.S. citizens, had a remedy under the Alien Tort Statute for state-sponsored torture, when they were harmed by state-sponsored torture, U.S. nationals didn't have that a cause of action at U.S. law. And Judge Bork had called into question in Telleran whether Congress could even recognize a cause of action absent congressional legislation. And so Congress enacted the TVPA in part to make clear that U.S. citizens also had this remedy. But it did so in a time where the Alien Tort Statute only applied to individuals. Corporations, the practice of suing corporations under the Alien Tort Statute did not arise until some years after the TVPA was enacted. So at the time the TVPA was enacted, Congress would have understood it to be reaching natural persons in a similar way that the Alien Tort Statute was reaching natural persons only. So there's no sense here that reading individual to mean only natural persons would entirely gut the purpose of the statute, which then distinguishes the cases on which the plaintiffs relied. Another, I guess, fundamental point I want to make about the use of the term individual here is that plaintiff's construction of the statute would require a finding that the Palestinian Authority is both the individual and the foreign nation under whose authority or color of law the PA is acting. And this sort of nonsensical reading of the statute demonstrates that Congress could not have intended for a foreign government or quasi-state to be both the individual who is liable and the foreign nation under whose authority or color of law the individual acts.
I don't understand why that follows. I mean, I see why it's your second argument. I don't see why you couldn't say the city of Chicago acting under color of its law does this, does such and such.
Well, just the terminology, an individual acting under the color of law, it seems to suggest to some other authority. I think the more natural reading
is... Suppose it were the city of Chicago acting under the color of law of Illinois, because it's got an authorization and it's state law.
But it's the same entity here. It's the PA in both situations.
No, it's an individual, and then it's a foreign color of law of a foreign nation. So if the individual is something that is, I mean, that could be an entity,
right,
then it's not the same as the foreign nation.
But the plaintiffs have argued that the PA is the individual and the foreign nation. It's a minor point. I don't want to
believe it. Part of their argument, as I understand it, is that it's a foreign sort of quasi-nation.
Well, right? Let me turn to this state action requirement, because I think it's really important to understand what the PA was when Mr. Rahim's alleged abduction and extrajudicial killing was alleged to
occur. Was it not the functioning source of law in the territory?
Mr. Rahim was alleged to be abducted September 27, 1995. The Oslo Accords, the interim agreement on the West Bank and Gaza Strip, wasn't signed until the next day. And it wasn't implemented until later that year.
What was going on in the place where was he abducted?
So,
West Bank.
So
what was going on there?
So
who was in charge?
The Declaration of Principles had been signed. There had been some early transfer of power as to the Gaza Strip and as to Jericho, where Mr. Rahim was allegedly taken. So the PA had some security control in Jericho, and they had it in the Gaza Strip. As to the remainder of the West Bank, the PA had no...
So this happened in Jericho.
Well, he was abducted elsewhere. But my point isn't
the
whether they had...
Where does the violation that's alleged in the complaint take place, according to the complaint?
The violation is alleged to take place in Jericho. My point
Jericho,
is not that they...
the PA had some authority, so how do you describe it?
Yes, my point is not that they didn't have security authority in Jericho. My point is that if you're thinking of the PA that exists today as a sort of quasi-state, that was not the PA that existed.
Well, tell us more about the PA as a relevant date.
So in the relevant date, the PA had no civil authority or security authority over anything in the West Bank other than Jericho.
But Jericho is what matters, so let's tell us about what happens,
what its authority was
in Jericho.
The question is some entity that controls only, has some security control in a city sufficiently like a foreign state that it should be treated as a quasi-state?
Well, is the Vatican not to be treated that way in Vatican City?
I think the Vatican has been determined under international law, has been recognized to have a particular unique status. No one has recognized the PA to have anything like a state status. And in fact, plaintiffs regularly liken the PA in arguing, which I think is what you're sort of getting at, is this sort of, you know, if you're wielding official power, if you're exercising official power in a particular place, are you sufficiently state-like that you satisfy a state action requirement? And plaintiffs regularly liken the PA to the Serbian Republic of Bosnia-Herzegovina, in the quasi-state in Kadesh versus Karadzic. But there, that quasi-state had been alleged to meet the restatement on the law of foreign relations definition of what constitutes a state under international law. So it controlled a defined territory, it controlled population within its defined territory, it had declared statehood.
Was Jericho a defined place?
So, well, the courts, including
the
first,
it doesn't have walls anymore.
Yeah, it's just I've never been there, frankly, but it's just a city as I understand it. The courts, including the First Circuit, have held that the PA does not meet any of those criteria for statehood. So even if one concluded that foreign nation has some unique meaning under the TVPA that's somehow different from foreign state, plaintiffs have not explained how, in September 1995, the PA would meet any criteria for constituting a foreign nation.
So if Hezbollah were to abduct an American citizen and torture,
yes,
would there be a cause of action under anything, if not under this, under something else?
It wouldn't be a... criminalized, for example, if you could find the Hezbollah torture in the U.S., the U.S. torture statute would criminalize that behavior.
Now, I'm asking whether there's civil... whether there would be a civil act. You'd say that they're not an individual.
The U.S. courts would not have jurisdiction over that because there is no civil cause of action.
That is, you'd say it would not come under this.
It would not come under this because the Hezbollah doesn't, to my knowledge, act under color of law of a foreign nation.
Well, they may act under color of law either of Lebanon or Iran. And the interesting thing is you can sue Iran for acts of Hezbollah, which people have done here, and they get under the terrorism exception, but you can't actually sue Hezbollah itself. Is that what you're saying?
I see your point. Yes. Yeah, so assuming they're acting under color of law of a foreign nation, you could not sue them as an entity. The statute imposes liability on individuals, and that's not inconsistent with international law, and I will refer the court to the recent Second Circuit decision, Kiobel versus Royal Dutch Petroleum, where...
That was a corporation. It seems a little different, doesn't it?
Well, but when doing this sort of searching analysis of the sources of international law, the enabling statutes of various tribunals, the decisions of various tribunals, the decisions of various jurists, it concluded that regularly international law was imposing, created a norm only as to human beings. So it treated human beings as violating human rights law, but did not subject other entities to international to law to such an extent that it was considered something over which courts would exercise universal jurisdiction.
What about the Kadic case? Seems to say just that. Coming up, which I believe came out of the situation you referred to, right, in Herzegovina.
Well, Kadic deals with first the Alien Tort Statute and its pre-SOSA. And it holds that there may be a war crimes exception to the state action requirement such that you could impose liability on non-state actors.
Well, maybe it was referring to war crimes, but the phrase it uses is exceeding internationally recognized standards of civilized conduct.
And those standards, based on this exhaustive survey that the Second Circuit made, have been applied to human beings as opposed to corporate entities or large organizations, except in the context perhaps of environmental crimes. There was some precedent there for perhaps for corporate liability, but not in sort of the human rights context.
It's true that involves an individual, but the inquiry to which the court turns is not whether statehood.
Right.
In all its formality exists. Right?
And this is where the restatement point is significant, because what hadn't happened with the Serbian Republic of Bosnia and Herzegovina is no one else had recognized it as a state. So it was missing that criteria, which is important under U.S. law for sovereign immunity purposes or for some sort of generally understood definition of what is a state. But the plaintiffs had alleged that it met all of the other requirements under the restatement. It controlled the defined territory, it controlled the population within that territory, it engaged in relations with other nations. The courts have held that the PA does not meet those requirements, and it certainly would not have met them in September 1995. So it's very different from the entity that's involved in Kadish. But again, Kadish is pre-SOSA, and I think SOSA urges courts to exercise extra caution when expanding extraterritorial jurisdiction and deciding over which international law norms will U.S. courts open their doors. And it urges courts to...
It urges courts in the context of the ATS.
Yes.
But it doesn't urge it in the context of a statute, interpreting the meaning of a statute.
It does say that courts should look to legislative guidance, that for the most part it's the legislature that should define the scope of
remedies. Well, I don't think that your opposing counsel is asking us to invent a cause of action. He's asking us to interpret a cause of action that a legislature has established.
Well, his second claim is asking you
That's
to invent a cause of action.
But that is his second claim, which till this exact moment no one has mentioned.
Right. So returning to the TVPA, my point perhaps is better stated as, when construing a statute that has extraterritorial reach, there is a reason to be cautious when interpreting the terms and to not construe them in a way that's inconsistent with the plain meaning in the absence of any congressional intent to the contrary, where the effect of such a broad reading is to, in this instance, make the U.S. court sort of police Palestinian treatment of Palestinian prisoners. And SOSA says that because when...
Only the ones who are Americans or all? Would they all come under this?
Under the TVPA, it does not distinguish between U.S. nationals or non-U.S. nationals. So it would be all. Aliens would have a cause of action under the TVPA as well.
They would still have to have... Would they have to have any kind of personal... Would the plaintiff have to have any kind of personal jurisdiction in the United States? Any personal contact with the United States or not?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Further questions?
No, thanks.
No.
Thank you, Ms. Ferguson.
Very quickly, Your Honors, I just want to correct something. Ms. Ferguson said that she represented that it's been decided that the Palestinian Authority, I believe her words were, had no attributes of statehood. That's not correct. All the decisions that have addressed whether or not the Palestinian Authority must be treated as a state have been in a foreign sovereign, in a sovereign immunity context. And the conclusion has been always, consistently across all the cases that have addressed it, that it has some attributes of statehood, some, but not enough to rise to the level of being entitled to sovereign immunity. So it is, to say that it is quasi-state-like is exactly accurate. And in the 14 seconds I have left, Judge Garland, I did not mean to abandon that second claim. Simply, I ran out of time.
Oh, I understand that, but in the 2 seconds you have left, is she right that if you're right, every prisoner tortured by the PA in the statute of limitations, whatever it was, could sue in the United States court?
She may well be. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that is anything other than what Congress intended.
Thank you, Mr. Tolson.
Thank you, Justice
Ferguson. Thank you. Case is submitted.